Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. This is the place where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dennis.
You need that?
Yes.
And I'm Brandon Rhodes, and we are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally, with a global perspective, and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
We are, where the hell am I?
See, that's why we need script cards. That's why we need two of them.
Maybe we can save up and get a second half of a piece of paper. We're covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles, and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communications, the internet, snow flurry survivalism.
That's right, yeah. We had a crazy snowstorm here in Portland, Oregon, which for most, I think, of the United States and most of the world probably isn't all that much. It's not really that crazy, but we got like, I don't know, like what, half an inch in an hour? And then the sun came out and it, okay. It seemed like a lot. It was coming down really thickly. And you, sir, Mr. Matt Picchio, our esteemed guest today, were out, were you out in it when it started or?
No, most of it was pretty much gone by the time I actually got out there, but I was riding on the snow while the snow was on the ground.
There we go. That counts. That's it's a Portland Christmas. So yeah.
Which makes you a god in Portland, but you get a slow clap at best from a lot of the rest of the northern half of this country.
Yeah. Well, I think people just need to understand that in Portland, it's not like it is other places. Other places, snow is regular. It's part of your everyday life, but here it's not so much.
We don't want to disenchant ourselves from the wonder and horror of wintertime weather.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, and I immediately thought of my wife, who at this moment, I think, is riding back from eastern Oregon. They're not taking the pass, apparently. They're coming through the Dalles, which is probably a good choice in weather like this. But who knows what it's like in the mountains. So, anyways, notice I said mountains, not mountains.
Oh, you got rid of the T. Oh, yeah, that's a proper Cascadia accent.
If you're paying attention to my northwestern accent. So
we drop hard consonants in the middle of
we
words.
Do. Do you drop hard consonants?
Oh, yeah.
Are you in continents?
As such.
I'm originally from Detroit, the big one, not the little one that's tucked into Cascadia. But
that's true. There is one.
Yeah. So it depends. I tend to pick up little bits of wherever I'm living. So
okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think I do too. I'm an impressionable piece of clay, really, in all manners and forms. But hey, this is the first time we've done a bona fide live podcast in about a month or more. And it's good to be back, man. It's good to be back here with beer in hand, with a guest in chair three. And this is a good day. So good to be back. Anything big happened for you, Brandon, in the past week or two?
No.
Okay, not at all.
No.
No, okay.
I should have come prepared. You ask that every single episode.
It's true. It's true. That's just usually it's really an excuse for me to gather my thoughts, but yeah, I can
I'll use
say,
your week to gather my thoughts and zone out. So, Brock, how was your week?
Perfect. Well, I have to say the same. I didn't have anything really exciting happen at all. I did go down
this to... This is a great episode so far.
It really is. I went down to the Bike Rack, which is a cart-based bike shop down at a local Food Cart Pod here in Portland. And if you don't live in Portland, you may not be familiar with the Food Cart Pod idea, but it's a bunch of trailers all fastened to the ground. And people sell food out of them, and people go there to eat and recreate and that sort of thing. The bike cart is a business. It's a bike shop inside of a trailer, and they offer services because this cart pod is right next to the multi-use trail called the Springwater Corridor, which is what we also live on. So they're local. They're a small business. I like to support the people that are nearby. I want them to stick around. So I had them build up my wife's frame. She had developed a hole in her frame down. Let's see. It's the part of the frame that goes down to the back wheel from the seat, and there's two small ones, and I don't know what the technical term for that is, unfortunately. I should. But she'd been carrying
the
her...
top tubes of the rear triangle, we'll call it
something
that.
Like that, yeah. She'd been carrying her U-lock there, kind of wrapped around those two stays and then around the seat tube for like the past 2 years or 3 years or however long she's had the bike. And let me tell you right now, I told her that'd be a great place to put it. I was wrong. It developed a hole, and... I guess aluminum and a U-lock are not made of the same material.
Nope, and the U-lock wins.
So anyways, it's been slowly wearing away at her frame for the past 3 years, and it finally came to a head when it you know, she discovered this hole underneath it a couple weeks ago, maybe two. So we went out and bought a new frame, and I was showing you, Matt, before we came in. You were saying it was legitimate. In fact, you had the same brand. It's the Kona Sutra. yes. Which looks like a fantastic touring bike. Yours looks awesome, by the way. It looks like it could take some abuse and take you many miles down the road.
If you look a little more closely at it, you can see that it's already taken some abuse.
I guess that's kind of what the whole thing's about. So we're looking forward to seasoning my wife's bike in that same manner. But yeah, took it down there and they swapped all of her old components with a few notable exceptions. So
this episode is brought to you by the wonderful people at
The Bike Cart. It's the-bike-cart.com, I think is their website. And I've been talking with Lee, the proprietor, about possibly coming in at some point in March. Great. He's hoping to open up for business again back when the weather, I guess, gets to a reasonable level and people are out riding for fun again. It's nice because they're right there on the path. And so if you're out there and something happens or if you need something, you can always have your work done, you know, while you wait. So, yeah, it's cool stuff. But that's what I've been doing. And I was actually walking back with the new bike and the old bike frame in hand when the snow started dumping with a fury. So I didn't have gloves or a hat or anything. I was woofully unprepared. But I suppose that's kind of status quo for Portland and snow. So
Right.
Anyways, that's what I did this weekend. The rest of it I spent being sick, so I don't know if it still comes through in my voice. Probably so, but I feel still a bit sniffly. So you guys are drinking beer. This is the Ninkasi.
Yes, the Total Domination.
I like how you guys both look down at the label in synchronicity.
Yes, so it is.
But yeah, that is one of my favorite IPAs. And you were saying, Matt, I think you started your tour, this big tour that we'll talk a little bit more about later, but you started kind of at Ninkasi in the first couple days.
Yeah, actually the first couple of weeks.
Oh, that's okay.
we could get into that later, but
right.
But yeah, I was when I was staying near Cobourg, which is a small town north of Eugene, I went down to the tasting room down there and I had a couple of beers and was locking my bike up outside, and all of a sudden 6-7 women rode up and one of them started talking to me. She's basically said, "You look like you're really loaded up." And I said, "Yeah, I'm doing a cross country trip." And she started asking me some questions about it. And then all of a sudden it's like, "Well, hey, I just won a bunch of money at the last bar we were at. And yes, we're all doing this big bar to bar ride called Beeropalooza. And yeah, come on in, I'll buy you a drink." And so I was like, "Well, yeah, sure.
Hey now." It's like a bunch of women all inviting you to drink with them, and they're going to give you money. So it couldn't be any better than that.
Well, they were all married, but, you know, that's not a problem. But.
Yeah, sure. Well, good times. So Ninkasi, beautiful brewery. That's one of my personal favorites as well. And their tasting room is pretty fantastic down there in Eugene. Have you been, Brandon? Have we talked about this?
I have not. No, they opened up after I moved out of Eugene. Yeah,
because you went to school down there, and you were there for 4 years?
Three.
Okay. You were on the fast educational track.
That's me. I was impatient.
Yeah. But they've got a pretty fantastic facility, and it's pretty stripped down. It's not a huge place. It's not like a brew pub. It's basically like their building is there and all the big tanks are in back. And then they have this little room in front where you can sit down and have a beer. I found out, I may have said this on the podcast before, but, their tables are not fastened to the ground. So if you end up sitting down, and I think I'm trying to remember, do you remember, Matt, if they have the little ring around the bottom, like kind of like a bar at a bar where you put your feet up on the bar that's mounted to the counter?
I think they do at the bar itself.
Okay. Because I know I'm pretty sure they had that on the table as well. And so I was using that to kind of hoist myself into my seat. And the whole table just started toppling back and forth. I spilled my beer and my wife's beer. Not the whole thing, but enough to slosh around and request a rag to clean it up with. So should you happen to visit Ninkasi Brewing down in Eugene, Oregon, don't make the same mistake I did.
Tall man. You thought you needed a boost?
They're tall stools.
Hey, well.
So anyways.
Or alternatively, you could sit on the patio.
That's true. Yeah. And the patio is wonderful. It's lovely in the summer. It's a lot of concrete.
It's huge.
That's
though.
What patios are. I'm being the cynical prick over here. I'm sorry.
Yes, you are. That's okay. That's your role as number one.
That's right.
Or something. I don't know. Well, should we hop into our news headlines?
Let's do that.
All right. Sounds good. Oh, hey, you've got it over there. Look at you. By the way, this is
can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike.
Local Portland man Herbert.
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Pedal just as fast as we can into the morning light. Pedal just as fast as we can into the daylight. Pedal just as fast as we can into the night light. Pedal just as fast as the legs will let us. Your pedal just as fast.
Now, do you have them over on your side?
Yeah.
There?
Okay, great. I realized something may have gone wrong there.
No, it's okay. All right. Need multiple pieces of technology.
Indeed. First up, from Logan, pedal-powered shanty boat is a mobile place to live.
Yeah, and he sent over this article here, which is pretty damn awesome. It's this beautiful kind of, I guess, what, shanty boat? Is that? I always thought shanty was a pejorative term, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's only pejorative when it's used in certain
ways.
Yeah,
I guess so.
But I think this person is owning up to the title anyways. So what is it? The 18-foot by 6-inch, or excuse me, 18-foot, that'd be a really thin boat, 18-foot 6-inch by 6-foot escargot is what they call it. Pedal-powered boat designed by Phil Thiel. And it looks like it's something that you can live in. It looks in this picture here, you've got the possibility of a little canopy to sit underneath when it's either wet or sunny. And this piece here at the back of the boat, I believe, is the cool part because you've got the saddle and the pedals mounted here. And that's how you.
So it's like those novelty little pedal boats that you get at the lake.
Yeah,
but applied to a house, to a shanty.
Exactly. So
this is like Flintstones meets like Waterworld meets like retirements on the bayou.
Exactly. Flintstones meet the Aquastones or whatever. And then on the inside here, you've got the table and benches, places to sit. And then like they have the full on, there's like a range. It looks like a gas range where you could cook your meals. And and then there's a small picture of the actual blueprint there.
Oh my gosh, that's cool.
Yeah. And the cool part here was this one is a 91-year-old naval architect. He's the guy
in retirement.
Yeah. He lives in Seattle, very much, I suppose, in retirement by now. But he's created human-powered boats since his teenage years. So he's been doing this for a long, long time. And according to Wooden Boat Magazine, he's only driven a car twice in his lifetime, which is an impressive feat.
Jeez, that's pretty good. Yeah.
I drive for a living, so there's no chance that I'll ever,
more than two.
Yes, I have. And I kind of enjoy it, too. It's like a guilty pleasure. You can get fully detailed plans for $150 by mail, and they've got a link to that here in the article. So that's pretty cool. I always thought, I go back and forth on this.
I would love to build one of those.
Wouldn't that be fun? I think it would be really cool. The idea of living on a boat is both, like, at the same time romantic, and I assume it's not romantic to other people. Like, I had thought about this before. Like, I've had lots of ideas about maybe living in some sort of mobile thing. I think it's one of the reasons that bicycle touring appeals to me so much is that, you know, you can go places, you can stay different spots, you can see the world, and, you know, everything that you need to survive is with you. So before I took up the bicycle touring thing, I thought about getting like an old bread truck or a step van or some kind, you know, and outfitting it with a cot or a bed or something like that. It seemed like it'd be fun.
Like a tiny house, but with a diesel engine.
Yeah. But at the same time, I also realize if I did that, if I chose to do that as a single guy, it would be harder probably to find women who'd be interested in like hanging out with me. So, and I don't know if that's true or not, but that was always what I thought.
Right.
Like, you know, this would be something you could do. Maybe once, like once you've gotten married or something, found your partner and you know, they're cool with what you're into. But yeah, I don't know.
You don't bring that up a couple of years into the marriage.
And so, by the way, I live in a house.
Maybe I've always had this dream of getting rid of all this bullshit.
Right. Right.
Moving into a floating box. Anyways,
that was from Logan, who also lives in a tiny house. So thanks, Logan. That's fantastic. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, yeah. Next up from Jeremy in Alabama, handcrafted wooden bikes.
This guy I know from high school.
Alaska?
Alabama, I think. Did I give it the...
AK would be Alaska.
That's
so
right.
I guess
AL
that's Alabama.
Is Alabama.
Yeah. Okay.
Glad we cleared that up.
Letters, they'd be confusing. Handcrafted wooden bikes made from felled city trees.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. And the picture here is awesome. It's like a chopper style thing, but the whole frame is made of wood, which is pretty awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good job them.
Yeah. And they've got a video here too, which I actually haven't watched yet, but I thought I'd just mention this and make mention on the podcast so people could check it out.
Yeah.
I like the idea that you could reclaim wood too. Like I don't know what usually happens to those trees, but I assume they don't usually plane them.
Probably going to the chipper.
Yeah, probably so.
They get the old Buscemi.
I was going to say, like the guy at the end of Fargo. So, anyways, yeah.
Next up.
I forgot to do these.
Thank you. Well, it's usually my job, but I've got...
Right. You don't have enough devices over there.
I kind of want to be like a one-man band and just have like an iPad strapped to my chest for... There, that's it.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And a harmonica. Mm-hmm. Next up, Taking the Lane, the conservative case for bicycling.
Yeah, this is Ellie Blue's blog, and it's something that you don't think about too often. At least I don't. Bicycling usually is kind of cheered by a largely left-wing sort of base, I think. I mean, not exclusively. There's all kinds of people riding bikes everywhere.
Freds.
Yeah, yeah. I bet more of the Freds are Republicans than anything else.
Yes.
Who knows? But she's got an article here about just about how it should be a truly bipartisan issue, in her words. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty cool. Like she uses some language here that you don't usually hear, but like it reflects a lot of the right wing sorts of values, which let's see. The first paragraph here is, bicycling is a wholesome activity that is good for families and particularly good for children. Riding a bike teaches the values of hard work, personal responsibility, independence, and resourcefulness. Wanting a bicycle is an opportunity for a young person to earn and save money. Having a bicycle is an opportunity to learn to work with their hands and perform repairs, rather than simply throwing things away. Kids who ride bicycles, rather than being chauffeured everywhere, turn into self-reliant adults who aren't afraid to take risks, can pick themselves up after a fall and keep going, and who do not expect to have everything in life handed to them on a silver platter.
This is amazing. She's like, yeah. She's pulling a Colbert, but out of utmost sincerity.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, the way that she's writing this, the language she's using, it's really good. It's what they call a code switch, I think, in certain places where you're not speaking as yourself.
To the Gentile, I'm a Gentile. To the
Sure. Yeah, you're speaking in a way that resounds with people, you know, that are different than you. So I was impressed. It's a large article. There's a lot of writing that she did here. But the sentence here at the very end. In summary, bicycling produces wealth, freedom, and opportunity for those prepared to work hard and take responsibility for their own role in making this country great. The only thing standing in the way of a new generation pulling itself up by its bootstraps is a bloated government mired in endless road building schemes and despotic energy seeking adventures, et cetera, et cetera.
That's awesome.
It's the only patriotic way to travel. We must put the stop to bureaucracy and corruption that for years have taken that choice away from the everyday American. So... I kind of wish I wish I had some patriotic music that we could have swelling behind us as we write this.
Well, I'll give her one. No, not that one.
Oh, okay.
Pre-stage Hail of the Chief.
We give you the conservative case for bicycles.
Exactly. So I thought that was pretty well written. And that, like I say, it's the sort of language that you don't often hear from people who are making an advocate. What am I trying to say here? I don't know how to conjugate my words. Anyone who wants to advocate bicycling.
Well, simplicity is sort of like kissing cousins, left-wing cousin to like frugality and fiscal responsibility.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right. So
we have more in common than we think.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the difference is
we're both cheap.
You and I?
No, like the left and right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. See? Yeah. You and I are both also cheap.
Yes.
Yes. Well, hey, and then lastly.
Oh, geez.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I keep missing my cues.
That's okay.
A month off. I'm still missing it.
We're getting used to it.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad we brought this up. This is rough. Path less pedaled. Russ gets beaten by an angry motorist in NZ.
Yeah. And did you read this article?
I did.
You should check it out.
I did.
Matt, I'm sure you've probably been at least... partially aware of this as well.
Yeah. I've kept up with it.
It's pretty intense. It sounds like the sort of thing that I always fear will happen here in America, but to me it hasn't happened yet. And I guess if it's happened to you, we could talk about that, I guess, while we're talking about your tour as well.
Matt, have you been beaten before?
Not on the road.
Okay.
That's true. You did have an interesting, we should talk about the altercation. It wasn't an altercation, I guess, in Yellowstone with the dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, down here, and you know, we've had Russ and Laura in the studio twice before, and they're great folks. We're really glad that they're doing what they're doing. But from what I remember about the article, they got sheared. Kind of ridden or driven closely to by a vehicle,
right outside Wellington.
Yeah,
and then he like raised his hands and was like, "What's up?
What the fuck? That's weird.
Yeah,
why would you do that?"
And then the guy pulled over and threw him to the ground and punched him in the face.
Right. which is crazy. And
which is really fucking crazy.
Seriously, yeah. I think they've got a couple articles on the site about this. The link that we have on ours is to the article written by Russ. Laura also wrote one that was kind of like, this is just what happened, kind of a basic summary. And then Russ got into the details of this is what happened. This is how I felt. But he was saying basically that you kind of see stuff in movies. You see violence happening in movies and you're like, wow, that's weird. And I think when I see, something happening on the screen, I'm like, oh, I know what I would do in that situation because I've seen all these other action movies or, that sort of thing. But he was saying like when it happens in real life, you're just not prepared for it. You don't expect a guy like you're thinking you're going to be able to work things out reasonably. And so when a guy's fist comes at your face, it really does catch you by surprise, even if it looks like he's kind of about to do that. Like you don't think people in civilized society.
Oh, he's about to raise his hand for the flip me off.
Exactly. Let me give you the bird up close, sir. Yes. So anyways, it was a sad thing, but they apparently they've been in touch with local media. They've been in touch with law enforcement. Largely, people have been really supportive of them, and they've had a chance to tell the story. And so, yeah.
Have you seen the updates lately?
I haven't seen the most recent ones, no. What did you see?
Apparently, what I saw on Facebook yesterday was that they arrested the guy who did it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So they had enough. I know they had witnesses at the scene of the event. So.
They got his plate number.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's what I was thinking when I was reading the article and this one, I guess in particular, just thinking, wow, like it's the sort of thing that you would think eventually the guy could be detained for. Apparently, as the guy was leaving, like after he dropped Russ and got back in his car, he ran a red light in the car as he was going away. But that's pretty.
Did they say anything more about this guy? Crazy. Has he got a reputation for?
I didn't look at the
people?
Details. Okay. I just noticed it today. I try to keep up on their stuff every once in a while. Russ and Laura were really great about giving me some tips on touring before I went on my big trip, and they also brought a number of people into Cycle Wild on our camping trips.
Yeah, yeah, they really enjoyed Cycle Wild while they were here in Portland. I remember.
And we really enjoyed having them. They're fantastic people. If you haven't met Russ and Laura, next time they're in Portland, you definitely should.
Right. And if you're not in Portland, just follow their website and you'll find them.
Fly to New Zealand and track them down.
They'll get there eventually.
Definitely. Yeah, exactly. And I know we have at least one guy. I think John is his name in New Zealand, who is at least an occasional listener. He's given us money before. Thank you, John. So you should make sure you talk to them while they're down there or wherever else they happen to be. But yeah, I think that's our last one. I didn't give you this last one, but just as a side note, this came up on my news feed the other day. Boring Station, nearing completion at the last link in Springwater Corridor Trail from Portland. The Springwater Corridor, which we mentioned earlier, we live on, and for the last however long it's been, they paved it in like 96, I think. And if I'm not mistaken, before that, do you know, Matt, if it was open as a recreation corridor before that?
The Springwater Corridor was purchased by the city in 1991 from the previous owner, which was Southern Pacific Railroad.
It was Southern Pacific?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. I knew it was a railway, but I didn't know it was a big one. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, they owned it, and the parts that still remain are owned by Dick Samuels of Oregon Pacific Railroad.
Okay.
So, but I'm not sure exactly when they paved it, but the last 4 miles to Boring have been a dirt road for...
Yeah.
How long?
Yeah. Ever since they opened it up, basically, it's been unpaved. My wife and I rode through there a couple weeks ago, and I think that was what stressed my rear wheel to the point where it actually exploded. Not just the spoke broke, but the entire rim failed. It looked like a volcano or something. But we were riding on that, and that's probably at least partly the reason why. Mm-hmm. Also, I don't know, Matt, if you've been out there. Brandon, did you know that there's a place called the Casadero Trail at the end of the... The spring
I did
water.
Not know that, dude.
Yeah, so the place that this they're building right now, a parking lot, and I guess Boring Station, which is an awesome name. It's a place where if
you'll have the time of your life.
That's right. If you wanted to do a ride into Portland from there, if you live farther out, or if you wanted to start there for some other reason by car, you can park there. Or it's a nice terminus where I'm sure they're going to have like bathroom facilities and water and that sort of thing. But after that, the corridor, it's an old rail line that used to go to Estacada, and it used to be like a trolley kind of rail thing back in the day. And if I'm not mistaken, it led to a like an amusement park. Like there was, you know, Ferris wheel and merry-go-round and everything out in Estacada that people would go out on Sundays or something to hang out.
Epic
and picnic
old
at.
Time.
Exactly. Yeah. Like the Flintstones. Yeah. So, we went out there and we were going to try and trace out the end of it. And it turns out that you can ride Oregon State Parks right now from Boring out to like where an old rail trestle used to be, now maintains it as a multi-use trail. It's just gravel unpaved, but it's a nice ride. It's mostly downhill, but then you get to the bottom and there's this big overhang where the trestle used to be. And I would love it if they would at some point put a bridge in so that cyclists could make their way out to Estacada by bike.
I've actually got some news on that.
Do you?
Yeah, actually.
Please fill us in, sir.
One of the things I've been doing with Cycle Wild, the nonprofit that I co-founded to teach people about bike camping, Travel Oregon, which is a group that the state of Oregon has to promote tourism, is in partnership right now with Clackamas County to promote bicycle touring in Clackamas County.
Really?
And part of one of the meetings that they had down there this past week in Estacada, I ended up hearing some updates on the Casadero Trail, and they're looking at potentially having that completed in about, the next 5 years.
Is that so?
Yes.
That's good news.
Well, the one piece of not so good news is there won't be a bridge over Deep Creek, which is the location you're talking about.
Okay.
They looked into it and they found out it would be $9 million to construct a bridge where the old trestle used to be.
Yeah. Wow. That's not the kind of money that people are just tossing around these days.
Right. And so since the trestle was removed, what they're looking at is putting a series of switchbacks in there. But I did hear an update from someone who was privy to the project, and they were saying that, there's a good shot at within the next 5 years. So, once they get this, the pavement and the trailhead done at Boring, that gets us, quite a ways there. But then the next step is getting it, getting the trail down and across Deep Creek and down to Barton on Highway 224.
And Barton's not a bad camping destination. It's a little busy.
There's a park right there, and there's the Barton store on the corner.
Barton store, which, by the way, serves, I think, hot dogs filled with cheese wrapped with bacon, which I bought before that raft trip that we took that other summer.
You need an extra boost in the arm to get yourself home. Attack.
That's good news. That's actually a lot closer than I expected it to be. That just the fact that people are talking about it makes me excited about the possibilities for the future.
Yeah, and the county's really putting an emphasis on bicycle tourism right now, and it's really good to see them do that.
Yeah, yeah. Which
that's the only reason somebody would really tour around. Dolly, you know where we should go? I've always wanted to see Clackamas County.
Clackamas.
It's a beautiful county.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize 50% of the county is Forest Service and BLM land. It's the Mount Hood National Forest and the Malala Recreation
Area. Going down through the upper Clack is just amazing.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's fantastically beautiful. And have you done the Bagby Hot Springs trip before? Have you done that by bike?
Cycle Wild's done that twice.
Okay, yeah.
I've actually been, we've done that three times, but I don't really count the first one because I was the only participant.
Okay. Well, hey, let me close out this news sounder real quick, and then we'll get right into Cycle Wild because that sounds like cool stuff.
You're taking a lot of responsibility in owning and riding a bicycle. You are now an operator of a wheeled vehicle.
So that's, I'm really excited about the whole possibility of going out to Clackamas, because like you say, there's so much forested land, there's so much good stuff out in Clackamas, just south of Estacada. I know there's a road that's been closed to vehicles, motorized vehicles, and open to pedestrians and bicyclists, and I can't remember the name of the road.
Faraday Road.
That's the one. Yeah, it wraps around the reservoir that's out there, and there's a couple of dams in place. But that's a really nice option, because once you leave Estacada, you can get there by bus if you want to. You can go out of town just less than a mile, and you're already away from traffic and away from everything. So
yeah, Faraday is fantastic. It's a PGE access road to the Casadero Dam and the North Fork Dam on the Clackamas.
Okay. Do you know who this Casadero fellow was? I feel like I should.
Let's make up some awesome mythology.
I feel like he sounds like a Spanish
cocaine.
Inquisitor.
I'm not sure. It dates back the history of Estacada and the Springwater Corridor and the Casadero Trail. That the entire thing was originally what you were saying was true about there being a trolley that went out there, but the line was originally built to bring materials out there to build the original Casadero Dam.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And
really, that was its first purpose, was to the dam?
Yeah, for the original one. The one that's there now is not the original. They replaced it with a larger one. But
yeah.
And the Faraday Road actually opened a week ago.
Oh, did it? Because it was closed because of a landslide.
Yes, it was closed the entire season. It's a lot of people don't know Faraday Road used to be the original Highway 224.
Oh, really?
And they had so many landslides on that road that they built a bypass, and that's the one that's there now. But yeah, if you get a chance to ride out there, it's a nice, gentle grade. You gain a couple hundred feet of elevation, and the bypass actually goes from 500 feet up to 1,100 feet.
Yeah, have you ever ridden that?
Yeah, once.
I did it once as well. I did it in the summer wearing wool pants, I think, or like wool shorts. It was ridiculous. I was just, it was like a 100-degree day, and that's one of the steepest roads I think I've ever gone up. But
yeah, and I think Faraday is probably one of the best-kept open secrets in Clackamas County.
Sure. Yeah, it's not technically a secret, but just nobody knows about it.
Now it's not. Shit.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when I was involved with helping to field check the Clackamas County bicycle map, when that was going on, when the county was working with the County Bicycle Pedestrian Committee, and that wasn't even originally going to be on there. There were a couple of us who pointed out, hey, you need to get Faraday Road on here and let people know about this. I mean, that's how unknown it is. I mean, even with this recent meeting that I was at this week in Estacada, there were a lot of people who didn't know about Faraday Road, people who even only live a mile away from it.
That's really interesting. What was there any reason that it would be concealed? Like maybe the landslides, like maybe it won't be around for
no, it's just people don't notice it. When you're flying by in a car at 60 miles an hour and you just see this sign that says Faraday Road and a note that there's PGE stuff down there, you know, most people don't care about it.
Where is this?
It's 1 mile east of Estacada on Highway 224.
Okay.
There'll be a sign that says Faraday Road, and it probably has another sign that says something like PGE Hydro Project or something like that.
Oh, there it – ooh, that looks nice.
Isn't it nice?
Yeah.
It's just a tiny little road, and yeah. I think the reason I rode on the current highway and the bypass is because I wasn't sure it cut through. It says dead end, which is accurate for motor vehicles out there. And so that was the reason I didn't go that way at first on the ride. I was hoping to explore and see what was out there, but I didn't want to ride down a dead end road and find that there was nothing there. So I ended up going up over the highway first.
Yeah, which, and I originally found out about it because Michael Wolf, who's a local Randonneur, posted a thing on his blog at one point about the landslide because he went riding up the Clackamas with his girlfriend.
Okay.
And they rode Faraday Road on the way up, and when they came back, the landslide was there.
And so they did have to turn around and go back.
Yeah, they did have to turn around because they couldn't portage around it. But
that's rough.
But yeah, I found out about it through that, and we've used that a lot. You know, it's gorgeous out there. There's no traffic. It's PGE, since they use it as an access road, you'll occasionally see a PGE truck out there, but they're aware that they're cyclists and pedestrians, and they encourage it.
Yeah.
You know, it's they're actually required to provide recreational use on the river as part of their licensing agreements with the federal government.
It's built into the contract then.
Yeah. They're actually up for relicensing now, and there's likely to be some more recreational opportunities on the Clackamas that PGE will be required to provide as a result of the ongoing relicensing.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, is there anything in addition, do you think? Any new facilities or?
I'm fairly plugged into the process, but I haven't heard anything really fantastic yet. But I'll let you know.
Yeah, that's great. Well, tell us about Cycle Wild because we were kind of getting there. We were dancing towards it, I guess, as
lollygagging, really,
as we started talking about Estacada. But yeah, you're the founding member, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Well, there's actually three founding members. Okay. I'm the president, and I'll reluctantly admit that it was my idea. But back in 2007, I started camping occasionally on my bike. And really, this kind of got started because I didn't like camping alone.
Sure.
I wanted other people out there with me. And it was at that time, it was just my friend Tomas Quinones and myself. And so Tomas and I sat down with Steph Routh, who many people may know is the executive director for the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition.
Okay.
And the three of us formed Cycle Wild. Cycle Wild is a Oregon nonprofit corporation, and our mission is to reconnect people with nature via the bicycle. And mostly we do that by teaching people how to camp by bike.
I love that. I think your site is actually one of the first things I pass to people who are interested in getting into bicycle camping. Like people who haven't done it before, I say, hey, there's a really nice compendium here. Like I used to make my own packing lists and I would share those with people. But I mean, everybody's packing lists, their personal packing lists are so unique to them. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm pretty specific when I write down the stuff I'm going to take, like one smart wool sweater here, and that sort of thing. But you have like a really nice, generic, broad sort of list of things you need to take and kind of saying, this is what you need for like, an overnight, this is what you need for a weekend away, that sort of thing, which is pretty cool.
We've got two lists on there. One is very minimal. It's the one that basically says, these are the things that you should have in order to be safe and to make sure that you've got what you need for the weather. And then there's an example one we give there, which is actually one of my old packing lists mostly. And it's just provided as an example. I mean, one of the biggest things about us is, so we don't want to tell anybody what they have to have. There's so many different ways that you can, camp or tour by bike. And you can't tell somebody that one way is the right way because it differs with everyone. There's some things that people are willing to take. There's other things that people are not. I mean, I'm kind of notorious because I bring a cast iron skillet with me, and most people will not do about that.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing you don't get oftentimes.
No.
Are you using a trailer with that?
Not usually.
Really? That's awesome.
What if it was you could use a trailer if it was like an enormous, like one that you could use for like, a camp full of lumberjacks or something.
Half a pig. Yeah. I want to be able to cook half a pig on this.
Well, that kind of happened on one of our trips this year.
Is that right?
Yeah, the New Year's trip. Well, I had a trailer for some of the other stuff I was carrying, but I also, I've got a full set of cast iron at home because I love cooking with cast iron. But,
yeah.
For this, we do an annual trip on New Year's weekend every year that we call New Year's Revolution. And we do it in the cabins at Stubbs Stewart State Park, which are, it's only 23 miles from Hillsboro.
Yeah.
About 47, 48 miles from downtown Portland.
And they sleep six, or is it six?
Five.
Five, yeah. And they're indoors, which makes it a perfect winter destination.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic. Two of the years we went, there was snow. Two of the years, there was rain. But either way, everybody had a great time. On this latest one, I actually brought the 12-inch cast iron skillet and cooked pancakes for everybody on New Year's Day.
That's rad.
That's fantastic. And touring cyclists have the appetite of a camp full of lumberjacks.
Oh, definitely.
That's for sure.
And that's one of the things with Cycle Wild, we put an emphasis on it being bike camping. One of the things that we kind of found out is when you say bike touring or bicycle touring to people, they get this kind of preconception in their minds that you need to have a lot of stuff and that it's really expensive and that you've got to have thousands of dollars worth of gear.
Yeah.
And you really don't. I mean, you can get by if you've ever camped before, even if it's car camping, you probably have everything you need in order to camp by bike. You basically only just need a rear rack and stuff to strap to it. I mean, I started off with a mountain bike with a rear rack, a milk crate from Fred Meyer attached with Velcro from Walmart, and and everything else got shoved in there. All the camping gear I had just got put in that, and I've got a couple pictures. They look a little ridiculous with stuff going about 4 feet above the milk cart.
That's fantastic.
But yeah, it's you can do that. I mean, when I was on my long trip this past year, I ran into a guy who was touring from Illinois. And all he had was a rear rack, and he had one of those big suitcases strapped to it, like you would see in ocean going voyages with the big straps and the buckles.
It's like somebody from a Wes Anderson movie going by.
Right. Great. Like a trunk.
It was fantastic. I'd never seen that before.
That's really cool.
But this guy seemed to totally rock it. I wasn't going to tell him he was doing it wrong. Cause
right.
Because clearly it was working.
Right, exactly. Because I met him in Nebraska. It's not like he hadn't been riding for 2 weeks.
There's a certain brilliant elegance to that because you can stop by the cafe, pop it off, and not look like a weirdo when you show up. Like people aren't going to be like, well, what's up with all you? What are you bringing a tent in here for? Or whatever.
I mean, you have a suitcase.
Yeah, you have a suitcase.
You're taking it into a cafe.
Fuck you, I have a suitcase.
I guess you could say that.
How dare you speak to me?
Exactly. So anyways, yeah, I love that. Did you ever see the, I think Russ and Laura had an article about the phrase "you're doing it wrong." It was
yeah.
Specifically about pedals, I think, about like clipping in and whether or not you need to do that. I agree with them. I say you don't need to.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of that. And I'm sure you'll want to talk about the big trip later, but
yes,
when I was on the big trip, there were a number of people.
Let's talk about it now. Let's get into it. While it's convenient.
Well, I just want to say, when I was on this trip, I kept running into people who were veteran bike tourers.
Uh-huh.
And they would look at what I was carrying, especially the cast iron skillet. And they'd look at some of the stuff and say, yeah, you're going to send that back in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And there were a couple spots where I really kind of wanted to say, you know, I really respect the fact that you rode in Australia and New Zealand and Africa and Tibet and the United States.
Sure.
And that you've got some opinions. But, you know, I've kind of been doing this for like 85 days of overnights.
So exactly.
I have an idea of what I
what is an extra 200 carry. Yeah, I give you. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's say just for the trip, you started out with some technical problems. Your frame had some big issues like right off the bat.
Oh, right.
So tell us about that first, man.
Yeah, and actually the word you were looking for earlier is seat stays.
Oh, that's it. Okay, thank you.
And yeah, I had a problem with one of the seat stays on my bike. I have a Kona Sutra. It was a 2008, and the frame had about 14,000 miles on it. And I have a habit of kind of overloading the rack a bit. And the frame cracked underneath the mounting point for the rear rack about 3 weeks before I was going to go on my long trip.
That's rough.
And unfortunately, the guys at Selwood Cycle, they were able to get me a new frame. It was under warranty. Kona's actually got a pretty good warranty on their frames. So
that's cool.
Yeah. You'll like that Sutra, I think.
I hope so. Yeah, it's the one we were building up for my wife. So, yeah, so you had that replaced. It seems like that's the sort of thing, like, if you didn't have a good mechanic behind you to kind of help you through that transition, it would be really difficult to keep the momentum of how's that phone doing on this?
Shut up.
It would be good to have that to just keep the momentum going, like, for you to be able to get on your tour, like, when you plan to start and all that.
Yeah, those guys were awesome. They really pulled through for me and got a really quick turnaround before I was leaving.
Yeah. Well, let's start with just like the basic details. Where did you ride? How far? How long did it take?
Well, I had originally intended to ride the entire way across the country from the Pacific to the Atlantic. That didn't quite work out because I took too long.
Sure.
I ended up riding from Portland west to Astoria so I could start it proper on the Pacific. And I started out following the Adventure Cycling Association's Transamerica route, which goes from Astoria to Yorktown, Virginia. And I kept on that until I got to Jackson, Wyoming. And then I decided I was done and doing my own thing.
Yeah.
And just kind of went from there. And I ended up finishing the trip after 167 days in Cleveland, Ohio, with a little over 4,800 miles.
Nice. That's impressive. Incredible. That's racking it up there.
So I took a lot of days off. I mean, I think I had something like 105 riding days and almost 62 rest days.
Well, that's not so bad. I mean, that's relaxing, to say the least.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And even my rest days, like 400 miles of that was rest days.
Yeah.
So 4,400 was actual travel days crossing the country. And yeah, it was quite a lot on the bike. I the days that I was traveling, I was averaging 45 miles a day.
Yeah, and that's not so bad, especially when you take into consideration that you're going up over a mountain range, or a few, and you got headwinds. You've got. Did you have any physical discomforts or?
No
broken bones, of course, but
no. But there were a fair number. I mean, you know, a lot of people end up having numbness in their hands when they first start off. Especially if you're kind of prone to like carpal tunnel or anything like that.
Okay.
That goes away after a while, after a few weeks. Saddle soreness, the normal stuff. A lot of it starts to go away when you've been biking a lot.
Yeah. But all those are factors that would kind of make it difficult to go longer distances or push ahead.
Definitely.
Like when you're kind of reaching your own limits and that sort of thing.
Definitely.
But yeah. Would you say, what are some of the, some of the best memories that stand out to you? And then we'll get to
There's a few.
Then we'll get to the really bad parts.
Well, I mean, you know, there was stuff in there that was really awesome.
the good memories and the good stories, I guess, are different things sometimes.
Yeah.
It's, riding through most of Montana was fantastic. Anywhere in the mountains, I love the mountains. Yellowstone National Park, I spent almost 2 weeks there.
Yeah.
Which was just, I really had the opportunity to enjoy it. And it, anything you've heard good about Yellowstone National Park is probably true.
Because usually the things you hear about Yellowstone is like, don't go there. It's crowded. It's whatever. You know, there's lots of people, that sort of
thing. RVs.
Yeah, I've got commentary on that. We'll get to that one. Yeah. But Yellowstone was fantastic. When I was in Missoula, Montana, the Adventure Cycling Association was a great place to stop because They have free ice cream for cyclists, and
I've heard about this.
Free drinks and stuff. And they have this whole room that's got, it's just like full of maps and brochures and stuff so that you can plan your route. They even have this huge map of the United States under glass on their table. And you can, it's a relief map where you can see the mountains and everything and get an idea of what's along that way.
That's
and,
helpful.
Yeah, they were really great over there. And that is where I decided I wasn't going to continue on the Trans Am. And I had some plans in mind, but they weren't really finalized until I got down to Jackson. Wyoming was pretty awesome. There was one day that I was riding and I was, Wyoming, there's some areas where you just can't take low traffic roads. There isn't anything. Yeah. You're going from Rock Springs East. There is I-80 and that's it.
Right.
You know, there's nothing else within 20 miles.
Dirt and sagebrush.
So I was riding the shoulder of Interstate 80, which is completely legal in the state of Wyoming.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic actually, because they had just repaved the freeway a year and a half earlier. And the shoulder was a 14-foot shoulder with rumble strips separating me from the traffic.
That makes you feel safe, doesn't it?
So even with 70-mile-an-hour traffic, it didn't matter to me. I was like 8.5 feet away rocking out tunes with my speaker and my MP3 player.
That's and, you got a speaker installed on your bike?
It's a small speaker. I picked it up in Rock Springs at one of the electronics stores there. And it's a bar. It's almost the length of my handlebar bag, and it's actually surprisingly loud for its size.
That's cool.
And it worked out great. I just had it strapped to the handlebar bag, and the MP3 player is really small, you know, like most of them nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, cranked up the tunes and was rocking out to that. I think I was listening to Ice House or somebody. And
nice.
Somebody else. It was kind of like I knew how many miles I had to go, and I was going for was at Cresswell Junction, I think, which is on I-80. There's nothing there. I mean, literally nothing there. There's a dead gas station that used to be a gas station, and then there's like a fireworks stand.
Yeah.
But just north of
that's a great combination. That's how they got rid of the gas station. That's how it's dead.
Precisely.
But yeah, you go just a little bit north of that, and it's all BLM land, and you can camp there for free.
Oh, there you go.
So I was just like pitched next to the barbed wire fence just inside BLM land, and spent the night there and then headed south towards, Steamboat Springs, Colorado. And
there you go.
Yeah, that was fantastic. And then I have to say the best day of the entire tour, that was one of the best days, but the best day of the entire tour was from Kearney, Nebraska to the state line with Iowa.
Okay.
It was my last really flat day. So I'd come down out of the mountains. I was in the Platte River Valley, and then I had gotten, you know, basically the middle of Nebraska, starting from Kearney, and I rode 137 miles in one day. I started a half an hour before sunrise and ended like an hour after sunset.
And did you have like a tailwind or something helping you out, or was it just like so flat that you just felt like you'd keep on going?
Well, and actually, now that I think about it, it wasn't to Iowa. It was to just outside Lincoln, Nebraska.
Okay.
And the next day was to Iowa.
Okay.
But, it's just, I had planned it to be a really long day.
Okay.
I planned it to be over 100 miles because I had gotten really close to 100 miles a few weeks before, and I wanted to just break it.
Yeah.
And because I'd never done 100 miles tour loaded before. Uh-huh.
And that's different than 100 miles like with nothing
it
on.
It sure is.
Yeah, yeah. If you're loaded for touring, you can take whatever your normal mileage is that you can whatever you're riding touring. Add one third to that, and that's what it feels like unloaded.
There we go.
So if you're riding 75 miles with a tour load, that's like 100 miles unloaded.
Sure.
And I had the longest I had ever ridden ever on an unloaded bike was 135 miles.
Okay.
So this was my new personal record in more ways than one.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was just an awesome day, and then I followed it up with another 86 miles into Iowa, which was ridiculous.
That's beautiful. Brandon did his first century last summer. And that was tour loaded.
With a bad ankle.
Oh, that's right.
After a week and a half of not having bicycled at all.
So on top of that equation, then with a bad ankle, you add like another 25% or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Anyways, yeah, that's good times. And you you wound up seeing family, right, close to the end of your ride?
Yeah, family and friends. I saw some friends in Chicago for a few days and then saw family in Detroit, Michigan for almost 2 weeks.
That's great. So. Nice.
Yeah, these are the reasons I didn't make it to the Atlantic.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, too much time standing around talking or drinking.
But it seems like that's kind of the reason that you do it, you know? It was, I don't know, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you wrote an article about kind of calling it off before you got to the Eastern Seaboard.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, my friend Brad in Chicago was really instrumental in kind of keeping me going, because I did have a bad spot in Montana. I'd had a couple days where it was like headwinds every day. There was one day I had a 35-mile-an-hour headwind all day, and I made it 11 miles to the next town and stayed
in this old
motel, like this 100-year-old motel where you don't even have your own bathroom. There's one bathroom on the second floor,
and
all the rooms just have a little wash basin in them. I mean, it's a serious historic hotel in the middle of Montana. And so I was really kind of down on myself and really kind of depressed, and I've always believed in being as honest as I can on the blog. So it was on the blog, and I got a whole flurry of, hey, keep going, we think you're great, and everything. And that was very helpful. I mean, my friends really are awesome. But what was even more helpful was Brad gave me a call. He's like, yeah, I just wanted to check in with you, see how you were doing. I'm like, yeah, I really don't feel all that great right now.
Yeah.
You know,
11
and he's
miles.
Like, well, you know, what is the point? Is the point to get across the country, or is the point to enjoy the trip on the way? You know, what's more important to you?
The journey or the destination?
Yeah. And I had to think about it. It's like, well, really, the journey is the more important thing.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I just kind of stopped worrying about schedules, and things worked after that. The other thing that really helped was right after I posted that blog post, I went over another mountain range through the pass and then came down into Ennis, Montana. And coming down into Ennis, there's like this 5-6 mile downhill. You know, you could drop a good couple thousand feet, you could see the next range of mountains that blocks you off from Yellowstone past that. And so it was just this gorgeous drop down in there. And then I stay at this RV park just north of Ennis, and sitting there with the tent, and I'm looking out at this mountain range, and the sun setting behind me is making all these beautiful colors and shadows on the mountain.
Yeah.
I even, you know, took a picture of me with my feet in the foreground with the mountains in the background. Like, this is my campsite tonight.
Yeah.
This is beautiful.
You know, this is why you're out here. You know?
Exactly. And even if you have to go over those mountains the next day, like, it's great to see them just because it's such a great experience. So beautiful. I think that train of thought and you sharing that train of thought was instrumental, because this next summer, my wife and I are planning another trip, and this time we're not going with, like, you know, destinations in mind every day, because that's how we've planned out all of our other trips. Is like, well, we have to be here by this day, you know, and we have to make like the end destination, because we have our plane tickets booked or something, you know. And I think it is nice if you can afford the time just to break it down and go at the pace of the life that you're having while you're on the road, so that you don't have to worry about, you know, about being late to somewhere, when it's really just like your own plans, and you're only late if you feel like it, I guess.
Right. So. I think that's a great way to approach it.
Yeah.
And also, if you do have a certain day that you need to be back by, and you have booked train or plane tickets, that is a great motivator.
It's true.
Later on in your tour.
Definitely. Yeah. Why don't you tell us about the Yellowstone guy? Because that was one of the most entertaining stories in my mind.
Well, Yellowstone was fantastic. There's a lot to see there, and there's a road that goes through the park. And first of all, I just want to say, a lot of people say Yellowstone is difficult to ride in. You know, they point out that there's lots of RVs and that they're going by you, and that there's not always a shoulder. I have to say, if you approach it from the Montana side, by the time you get into the park, you will not care about anything in the park, because these guys in Montana will go 65 miles an hour and pass a few feet away from you. And
wow.
I'm not saying that Montana drivers are bad, because actually Montana drivers were nowhere near the worst drivers.
They didn't hit you, so they're can't
yeah,
be that
they're,
bad.
They're actually. But the last couple of days before getting into the park, there were a few times where I was kind of feeling a little intimidated, because, you know, they do go by so fast. And then you get into the park, and the speed limit's 45 miles an hour. And because there's so many people in the park, they actually go 45 miles an hour.
Right.
And when you're used to people zipping by you at 65 and you get into the park, it's like all of a sudden everything is bliss, you know? You don't care about it anymore.
Right.
It was wonderful. And then there's two loops in Yellowstone with the park road. There's the lower loop and the upper loop. And I ended up doing the entire lower loop and looping back around.
Wow.
And the lower loop is the one that goes by Old Faithful. So I went through that on the first trip around. And then I was coming back through from Madison Campground on the second trip to go out the south end of the park. And so I had intended to basically go ride from Madison to Grant Village, which is another campground near the south end. And it's actually one of the harder parts in the park because there's no tent camping at Old Faithful. There's just the three lodges. The three lodges are always booked, and they're incredibly expensive.
A lot of people there.
Yeah, yeah. When I was there the day that this incident happened, the price of the one room remaining in the lodge was like $230 a night.
Which is a lot.
Ooh. So I actually ended up backtracking to Madison that night and having to re-ride back out to Old Faithful the next day to get to Grand Village. But yeah, I was, you know, riding out, taking my time exploring, and you go through a couple of areas of thermal features on the way there, and then you get to the Old Faithful area, which has got probably at least 20 different geysers, not just Old Faithful, but there's other ones that people check out. And there's a paved multi-use trail. You know, it starts off as a dirt bike trail from the main park road, and then becomes a paved multi-use for a while going into Old Faithful, and it's actually the old park road.
Yeah, okay.
So it's about, I don't know, 20 feet wide or so, enough for two lanes. And I was riding down this, and I was riding at, you know, reasonable pace, probably about 8-10 miles an hour, you know, probably closer to 8. And I would slow down when I come up on people that are walking and stuff. And I start coming up on this group, this family, you know, probably about 6 or 7 people, and they're all walking side by side across the path.
Out across, yeah.
And, you know, if you've ridden the Springwater corridor or any multi-use path, you've probably seen this on a, you know, summer day. If there's a lot of people, people will be walking in a line. They take up the whole path.
Yeah, happens all the time.
Yeah, it's, you know, cyclists sometimes get annoyed at stuff like that. And I've been, you know, I have nowhere to go. I wasn't really in a hurry,
right?
So
you're,
I was
not trying to set a record here.
Yeah, yeah. I come up behind him, and you know, Wyoming's like everywhere else. You're supposed to let people know when you're going to pass them. Mm-hmm. With a bell or just saying on your left. And so I was doing that. So I'm coming up on these people and whole line across here. And I start slowing down and I'm about to say on your left and let them move over so I can pass around them. And about the same time I'm about to say on your left, all of a sudden there's these two mountain bikers back behind me. One of them whizzes past me on the right hand side, cuts in front of me, in between me and one of the pedestrians walking in front of me. And then kind of like pops off the trail and back onto the trail, getting around her and passed her close enough that it scared her and she jumped back.
Like right into you, basically.
So, well, no, no. She jumped to the side and it wasn't a problem. But, you know, so I, and the person following behind this guy, she couldn't make it in between me and the pedestrians I was overtaking. So she all of a sudden braked hard enough to squeal her wheels. So, you know, I wait for a second and then I say on your left. And then when I was passing the pedestrians, I said fairly loudly to them, sorry, some people are just jerks. And then one of the guys in the pedestrian group is like, yeah, real asshole. Well, this guy who had passed had stopped a bit further up, presumably to wait for his girlfriend who was trailing him.
Sure.
And yeah, so he's just sitting there, and since I'm approaching him and he's stopped, I said, hey, you know, pretty loudly, this is a multi-use path. There are pedestrians here. They have the right of way. If you can't give them the right of way, you need to get off the trail.
Yeah.
Because I was pissed, you know. It's like, dude, this is Yellowstone, man. There's people, families, kids, you know. You
don't ruin somebody's day.
Yeah, exactly. And this guy's like, what? So I kind of repeated myself, and I'm getting up close to him now. Now I'm like up next to him. And he's like, are you calling me an asshole? And I don't know if he'd heard this other guy say, yeah, what an asshole or what, you know, but I'm like, yeah, yeah, I am. And then this guy all of a sudden shoves me.
While you're on a moving bike or you stopped?
I was stopped, but, you know, he like actually came up and physically shoved me enough that, you know, I had to steady myself to not lose balance.
Right.
You want to make something.
And I'm, yeah, exactly. And I'm thinking, okay, so we're graduating to physical now is, you know, and I
also to fifth grade.
Yeah. Well,
so we're in agreement. You are.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my thought. It's like, this really proves your case. Yeah, you're obviously not an asshole.
Seal
now.
That envelope.
But yeah. So I didn't push it any further than that, but his girlfriend had caught up to us and basically is trying to defuse the situation, trying to calm him down and asking me to move along.
Right.
And, so I didn't push it. I did move along.
Right.
And,
Which sounds like the best choice. Yeah, in that situation.
Yeah. I ended up filing a report with the park rangers so that they were aware that something was going on, especially because, you know, I don't know who this guy was, if he was an employee there, if he had a history of it. You know, the park doesn't know there's a problem if there isn't a report.
Yep. Right.
So I made the report. I didn't expect that they were going to be able to do anything about it because, you know, there's not a lot they can do about it.
But exactly.
Yeah, I really wasn't expecting to get assaulted by a fellow cyclist in Yellowstone.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, that's where you hope the justice system is like, you, sir, indeed, are an asshole. Now we have the law on our side as well. But no,
we put it on your permanent legal file with the system.
Right.
Subtitle, asshole.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyways, documentation is good just to make sure that people are aware. And if it becomes an issue again in the future, like, you know, they can say, well, hey, man, some issues here.
Yeah. And I've got to say that all of the staff I ran into, not just Yellowstone National Parks rangers, law enforcement and their staff, but also the concessionaires that they've got working there, were just fantastic people.
Oh, it's good to hear.
They're very welcoming to cyclists. You know, the Adventure Cycling's Transamerica route goes right through the park.
Oh, sure.
So they're used to seeing us there. They're very friendly. They're very outgoing. They're very professional, and they're very willing to work to, you know, provide people a happy and safe experience in the park.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I'm glad to hear that. Well, it's probably about time for us to wrap up. We do have that one comment from the mailbag, so let me pull that up real quick.
You've got mail.
There it is. Ethan from Pedal Power. He says, hope all is well. This might be a bit too, quote, Fred for you folks, but if you care to promote our Pedal Power jersey sale, we'd appreciate it. They've got some jerseys they've been making. The artwork is done by Kathleen King, a great artist who's done some other work for me. All proceeds will be used to help save the earth. So thanks, Ethan, for passing that along, and we've got a link to that up on our website at thesprocketpodcast.com. I almost said .org for some reason, which I'm not sure. Maybe it's because we were talking about
something. We're here for the people.
Yeah. Anyway, here for commercial interests. So if people want to find you on the internet, it's cyclewild.org.
That would be for Cycle Wild. If they want to find my personal
and
one,
your personal
dealing
website
with the trip and everything, that would be castironcyclist.com.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for coming in, and it's good to hear some stories and share all that stuff.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Definitely. Brandon, do you want to read the closing credits?
Oh, my God. This has been The Sprocket Podcast. You can find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send us feedback about the program, suggestions for topics and or guests and or drinks. That one I'm particularly eager for. I haven't had that in a while. By way of email, the interwebs there, thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a message at 503-847-9774. Jeez. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music, and find him on the internet at myspace.com/RyanJLane. I'm Brandon.
And I'm Brock. And this has been the Sprocket Podcast. Also, our headline sounder is provided by...
I knew I'd tease you with that.
By Hurt Bird.
You can find that. You had to come back for it.
At hurtbirdmusic.com. Is that right?
Yeah.
And we're also on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. All right. Have a good one. Bye. Ha ha ha!